Well, who'd have thought it then? Elton on his way. Still, never mind, he'll always have a place for us in our hearts. Isn't that right? Now that you've hopefully had time to relax, draw up, not go on speakerphone, be perfectly safe and okay and ready to actually contribute to the show, William Coles.
Yes, that is entirely right. I am now safely by the side of the road. We are fine.
Exactly. That's the important. Now, are there any passengers in the car with you, William? Because this is obviously another critical thing we need to be aware of.
No, fortunately they're not, because if they were, my children would start barracking me.
Yeah, and you know, parents are very difficult to bring into the world. When we actually start playing the idents, they get very confused. So what we simply do...
The truth is always out there, sometimes way out there, with the Midweek Drive team on Siren 107.3 FM.
You'll be saying, where's the Midweek Drive team? Well, we gather that Tessa Sonata is probably on her way, Hannah Brown possibly on her way, Eve McDonald, who knows? But, you know, that's all part and parcel of the way in which life manifests itself as we celebrate the penultimate Wednesday Midweek Drive of Siren Radio in this, the first month of 2018. It's quite awesome, really, Bill, and clearly we need to do something special to celebrate that. Do you not think so?
Yes, what are we going to do? Should we start singing?
No, we are going to actually quiz you, because you have said recently that the way that your writing career is going is more towards screenplays, more towards developments within that. And thanks to Larry Nemeczek and his awesome new podcast series, and Larry's going to be talking about this later on in the show, another one of our fine Californian correspondents, Larry has actually accessed, with the personal permission of the Roddenberry family, that's Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek, and indeed Rod Roddenberry, who's currently in charge of many of the wonderful things, the original 1967 third revision of the Star Trek Writer's Guide. And you'll be pleased to know, William, that actually there is a little test that is provided for all writers with respect to this particular guide to check whether you've got what it takes to write screenplays for the Star Trek television series. Do you want to take this test, okay?
Of course I do, Bring it on.
Okay, so your question is, can you find the major Star Trek format error in the following teaser from a story outline? Okay, the major Star Trek format error in the following teaser from a story outline. Now, don't worry, I'll give you a choice of four after I've read these two paragraphs. Okay, so you can always use random chance as a possible career definer. Admittedly, we're not in 1967 now. It is over 50 years since that year has actually passed, but at the same time, it kind of helps us celebrate where we're going to. Here it comes.
Okay.
The scene is the bridge of the USS United States spaceship Enterprise. Captain Kirk is at his command position, his lovely but highly efficient female yeoman at his side. Suddenly, and without provocation, our starship is attacked by an alien space vessel. We try to warn the alien vessel off, but it ignores us and begins loosening bolts of photon energy plasmas at us. The alien vessel's attack begins to weaken our deflectors. Mr. Spock reports to Captain Kirk that the next enemy bolt will probably break through and destroy the Enterprise. At this moment, we look up to see that final energy plasma bolt heading for us. There may be only 4 or 5 seconds of life left. Kirk puts his arms about his lovely yeoman, comforting and embracing her as they wait for what seems certain death. Fade out. End teaser. Have you got that in your mind, William?
Yes, I've got the whole thing.
Okay. So now, four choices. Which one is the format error? Is it, number one, inaccurate terminology? The Enterprise is more correctly an international vessel. The United Spaceship Enterprise. Not United States Spaceship. Is it, number two, scientifically incorrect? Energy plasma bolts could not be photon in nature. Is it number three? Unbelievable. The captain would not hug a pretty yeoman on the bridge of his vessel. Is it number four? A weak concept. This whole story opening reeks far too much of space pirate or similar bad science fiction.
Four.
You would not have been unsuccessful. In fact, you would have been unsuccessful, William. I'm sorry, it wasn't that at all.
Oh, right.
I'm giving you the line. I'm going to give you.
Was it giving the woman a hug? He doesn't do that, does he?
Well...
You don't hug a junior officer.
I might run this past a couple of other folk as the programme proceeds, just to see how they come. We'll certainly run it past Phil Leonis, because he won't be listening to this at this stage. It'll be too early in Los Angeles. Try again, the idea is. Same basic story situation, but against another background. The time is today. We're in Vietnam waters aboard the Navy cruiser USS Detroit. Suddenly an enemy gunboat heads for us. Our guns are unable to stop it, and we realise it's a suicide attack with an atomic warhead. Total destruction of our vessel and all aboard appears probable. Would Captain E.L. Henderson, presently commanding the USS Detroit, turn and hug a comely female WEF officer who happens to be on the ship's bridge? Answer
no, he certainly
exactly,
wouldn't.
And it's as simple as that. That is the standard test that has led to Star Trek believability. No, Captain Henderson wouldn't have actually hugged a female crewman, nor would our Captain Kirk if he's to remain believable. And that was
all
the first
right
time.
Then. Yeah. It was a pretty cheesy start, though, wasn't it? I mean, you know, the ship being attacked by
Photon torpedoes.
Lightning bolts or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you may be interested to know that one of the respondents that many writers actually gave to that was the question, are you people on LSD? To which the response was, we tried, but we couldn't keep it lit. Anyway, that's just some of the goodies that will be emerging thanks to Larry Nemechek and his weekly podcast series, which we've been privileged to actually share and will continue to share with folk who are jobbing writers from the Star Trek Bible. So let's share with us your... I mean, as we're in the Academy Awards season, William, and so on, screenplays and writing for particular series. If I was to wave a magic wand and say, William Coles, you can now write for any particular film series or adventure series or any particular series you would wish to, what would you wish to do?
Am I allowed to turn any of my own books into...
Of course. I mean, you know...
I'm chucking out Mr. Two-Bomb, then.
I would agree with you. I think that, and, of course, literally, he's not meaning that, you know, to throw out two bombs. It wouldn't be chucked out, because obviously that could be explosive, but he would actually be sort of adding to the whole situation, which is great. And, again, as you know, I feel very strongly about that book. I feel as though, in many ways, it resonates with our times and cultures across the eons, in much the same way as Pope Francis has just actually said that, you know, the original fake news was Eve being tempted by the serpent. Interesting.
Yeah, exactly. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah. I mean, well, is that fake news or is that just a lie?
Oh, hey, and where does one begin and the other end? You know, these are the kind of debates that ethically we will wrestle and continue to wrestle with as far as Siren Radio is concerned, because that, being based at the University of Lincoln, is part and parcel of our modus operandi.
I mean, I thought when he was going on about fake news and brought up Genesis, I thought, wow, that's a big one for the Pope to say that Genesis is fake news. Now, that is arguable, but the snake talking to Eve, not so much.
Well, Tessa Snart has arrived. Yay, go, Tessa. It's great. It's marvellous. Fashionably so. I remember the time.
Late.
In the first year, she'd be here half an hour beforehand. Oh, it's whatever.
That is true. This is what third year does to
you. Don't worry, Tessa. I'll repeat the experience for yourself. But you didn't catch any of the debate and discussion we had recently about which was the right selection for the story and how you could have actually become a Star Trek writer.
I didn't know.
No, it's completely lost. It's all right, William. Don't have to worry about that. But what are your views on the whole fake news issue, Tessa?
Fake news? Mm. It is a bit of a... just sorting out my headphones. Mm. It is a bit of an issue. I mean, I remember covering fake news on social media and TV last year. Mm. It's not very good, but then how do you filter it all? I think social media has a massive impact on, you know, fake news. And perhaps more needs to be done, to monitor it.
I've taken one single quote there, and I obviously need to social media the heck out of it. Tessa Snart, Level 3 journalist, University of Lincoln. It is a bit of an issue.
It is.
Genius. I mean, that William, what can you say? I mean, surely Rupert Murdoch is at the height of his powers when he just actually purchased the Sun newspaper in 1969 with Larry Lamb as editor. You know, it is a bit of an issue. That's what we want, isn't it, really?
It's a bit of an issue, but it's going to be the saviour of print newspapers, because a print newspaper has to abide by this sort of code of ethics. Mm-hmm. And if you read a story in a print newspaper, no matter whether it's right-wing or left-wing or tabloid or broadsheet, you know that the stories are probably going to be genuine. Whereas if it's on the internet, anyone could have made it up, including our friends at Russia Today.
No. Surely. Surely not RT. I mean, now they've got so many wondrous folks sort of working with them. Clearly, Russia Today. extraordinary. Just, again, not being afraid to work it. One thing we can guarantee is never fake is Sound and Country Vision, and it can now be announced next week, Bill.
Yes.
Next week, Bill, another live edition of Sound and Country Vision immediately after the Midweek Drive to see out January 2018, the 31st of the month, in a fantastic style. So it's been confirmed,
yes.
It's been sorted.
It is, yep.
Marvellous.
Excellent.
honestly, just amazing. Where are you going, Bill? I mean, you've pulled off the road now. You've kindly sort of taken off the speakerphone so we could actually hear you, because, frankly, even with subtitles, it was like watching some kind of strange Serbo-Croatian movie which was completely inexplicable to the human race. Where are you heading? Or is it a case of, quite rightly, you're entitled to say, look, I'm a private citizen, frankly, it's none of your business.
No, I'm going to pick up my kids. I'm weighed down with sweets. I've got Cadbury's cream eggs. I've got Curly Wurlies. I've got Tang plastic, and I'm picking them up from school.
Do you have any iron brew there?
No, we do not. I can't stand it. Unfortunately, neither can my children.
That's very good.
Have you actually tasted it?
No, not for many years. And again,
liquid bubble gum.
Yeah, they've now actually reduced the sugar in iron brew, so it's no longer a potential cure for hangovers either. So either way of those things is kind of, you know, approach it. There is a very high glucose content and sugar content in those particular contents. So are your children staying late at school, or are they just in detention?
No, one's been doing his homework and the other one's been playing hockey.
Hockey player, eh? Very good. Is he very good at hockey? Is he kind of...
He's all right. He's okay. Nothing special.
Yeah, what?
I don't think he's going to be getting into the Olympic team.
You never know. You never know.
You never know.
Says, honestly. So, looking ahead, Alistair Scott hopefully will be with us, the founder of Koi Clothing, an African clothing range which emerged from Kenya, and we saw at the London Boat Show last week. Arthur Weingarten from San Diego. Merrill Fankhauser. I say that again. Merrill Fankhauser with his Tiki Lounge album. Larry Nemechek has mentioned. Joe Lee will talk about recent Paddy Power bets on the United States presidency. Apparently a very popular one, William, and I'm not sure about the factuality of this, is seeing whether or not the president has had any enlargement procedures done on his particular, shall we say,
crown?
Yeah, his crown jewels. Even worse than that, but step away from that side of things immediately. And Phil Learness, all Lily Holliman, will probably update us on how Fuzz Aldrin, girl Fuzz,
yes.
Little teeny female Fuzz, have actually been doing. But Tessa, in the absence of Hannah Brown and Kat and Nick Elliott, who've left to go back to Norwich because they had to, but they send their very best and were very, very praiseworthy in your place in the current Midweek Drive Adventures in Audio calendar, which they've taken with them.
How lovely,
yeah.
Yeah,
exactly. So
you
can console yourself with the fact that there'll be a part of the Snart family, yourself and your mum in particular, who will be forever on the wall, at least for this year at least, of the Elliott household.
Oh, well, that's what we like to hear.
Anyway, that's by the by. You know, it means nothing to our dear listener. I know, I mean you. Would you like to, at 15:30 past 5 o'clock, ask William Coles those last two questions, please?
Yes. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I've loved it. I've realised that I will not be able to cut it as a Star Trek writer.
Well,
you never know.
You know. And the next one.
Will you be joining us again on the show soon?
Just as soon as the boss asks me. Thank you.
I'm not afraid to
Yes, it was actually 2 weeks ago, 2 English weeks ago, where we were in the joys of London's Excel Centre. Obviously, I say we, Tessa, you weren't around for that.
I wasn't there.
And obviously, you missed our ace BAFTA award-winning director, Graham Harper.
Yes.
And, of course, Ed Wellman being fully dressed. Well, I say fully dressed, obviously, they're normally clothes.
Let's hope so.
Completely naked. But actually adding to the quality of style, general joie de vivre and so on, with, of course, coy clothing. And guess what? On the anniversary of our first connection with Koi Clothing, 2 weeks ago, we welcome now Alistair Scott, co-founder of Koi Clothing. Welcome, Alistair Scott, to the Midweek Drive.
Yes, hi, Alex. Thank you very much for having me.
Good. Well, it's great that you're connected with the whole thing. We had a little bit of confusion. Our time machine wasn't working for some reason. Alistair was like, is it Monday? No, it wasn't. I send the script, the schedules out normally on a Monday or a Tuesday for people to actually cogitate or ignore completely, Alistair. It's entirely up to yourself, really, whatever happens.
Well, the days just muddle into one these days, don't they?
Well, are we in 2018 already? Listen, 2 weeks have gone since you were present at the London Boat Show. Now you've had time to reflect on your first ever exhibition there and the fantastic work that Koi Clothing are actually doing. How was it from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic experience. I've never even done an event in the XL at all, to be honest. But yeah, as I said, it's a new market for us to pitch to, a new year, new products, and it was a very exciting start to the year. Really enjoyed it.
And I mean, I always like to ask this because it's like the customer satisfaction system in many ways. How did you feel the team, that's Graham, Ed and myself, actually connected with you? Was it a pleasing interview? Was it a rubbish interview? Was it a case of, I can't believe it was that bad, I'm going to do it all again on the radio link? What was your thoughts about how
we... Yeah, no, I think it was a good start to the week. Obviously, at that point you interviewed me, it was literally the first thing I did when I got there. But obviously you always love the opportunity to share our story and talk a bit about the business and our products, etc. So it was a great opportunity. And now so we can reflect on how the week went as a whole.
Which is excellent. And, of course, the classic, Tessa, I mean, I'm talking about confusion. I think for some bizarre reason, I actually gave, because you know, occasionally if we really like an interviewee when we're doing our location reports, we say, I think this could be good. Let's exchange cards.
Yes.
I think in this instance, I actually might have given Alistair not my own card, but the card of one of my colleagues, Dr. David Cobham. Wonderful chap, David. Semi-regular midweek driver, etc. Thankfully, when Alistair drops an email to David, David sort of realises, I've never met this person in time in my life, and I was not the London Boat Show. But I do know somebody who might have done the radio, and it all worked out well in the end, you see.
That is good. A happy ending.
Got back in contact with you somehow.
Oh, destiny, clearly. Listen, for Tessa's benefit, we talked about this with Graham last week on the show, but would you like to just share with us what you had in mind with respect to Koi Clothing, how it connects with Kenya, how it opens up a whole range of other bits and pieces, and tell us a bit about the story relating to how you set up the company with your brother, of course.
Yeah, of course. My brother Jimmy, actually, he's out in Kenya at the moment. So the idea behind the brand really is it's a British lifestyle brand inspired by the tribes of Kenya. And me and Jimmy, having grown up in Kenya, we use a traditional Kenyan fabric called kikoi, and that's sort of the niche of our brand. Now, each of the different color fabrics we use is named after a different Kenyan tribe, and therefore what we do is we give 5% of sales back to the indigenous communities to sort of support and aid sort of development within the country. And now it's a little bit more than that. In fact, actually, we're signing licenses with the tribes, and we're trying to encourage other companies that use these tribes' names to give back to sign the same license agreement and therefore have to contribute 5% of sales in order to use the name. So that's sort of our big, you know, ethos and plan. And my brother's actually out in Kenya at the moment, as I said, and he met with the Maasai elders a couple of weeks ago, handed over our first check from our first year's trading, you know, signed the formal agreements and all that. So, yeah, very exciting. And he's still in Kenya doing other photo shoots, you know, for our future store and things like that. So it's been very exciting.
Well, of course, you do appreciate that with our links with San Diego, with Los Angeles, with New York, there's no reason why we can't actually connect with Kenya as well. So, I mean, I do believe they have things like telephones in Kenya. You know, so maybe
it's just about, yeah.
Something to roll out. We can actually do a live connection with her. Tessa, you're looking at the photographs that we took on the boat show. Thoughts and questions?
Well, I really love the jackets I'm looking at. There's three. The bright colours, they're very beautiful. And I think we need more bright colours in clothing. A lot of people wear quite I think, dull, especially over here because it's rainy quite a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Obviously, other than going to shows, where else do you sell the items of clothing? Do you have an online store or an actual...
Yeah, so our website is our main point of sale. And we market mainly through social media, through Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
And then sort of the events themselves are sort of the point of sale where we actually get to meet the customers and people can come along, you know, try the clothing on themselves, see it in person. And then through that, you get a lot of follow-up sales online afterwards.
So are these particular, because obviously at the boat show, I mean, it's a particular type of clothing I suppose people would wear. Do you only choose a certain type of shows to exhibit the clothing, or can anybody really wear them?
As I said, we're sort of in early stages of the business, so it's kind of a lot experimental at this point. But with the boat show in particular, it was just that a lot of people have obviously commented on our jackets as being sort of boating jackets, especially the sort of out there colourful ones, and just the sort of general type of clothing that sort of clientele would wear, as well as the fact that obviously at the boat show you have a sort of our price of our product is sort of mid to high affordable.
It's competitive. It's competitive. Let's face it, it's competitive.
Yeah, it's sort of that higher net worth individual goes to that kind of event.
I mean, suffice to say, if Princess Anne, who obviously was president of the show, sort of fancied maybe purchasing something for the family, I think, you know, it'd be worthwhile.
I think they'd be really good at the races as well, given the colours.
Yeah, we do. We're thinking of doing Cheltenham Festival. I don't think we're going to do it this year, but we might do next year. But we're doing, like, the classic car show, we're doing the game fair, we're doing, like, Burley horse trials, badminton horse trials, as well as, like, your Goodwood Festival of Speed.
He said Burley horse trials, Tessa.
Yes, exactly.
That's in our patch.
That is.
We'll be there.
Yep.
We'll be touching base and doing all
my I might be able to meet you.
We'll definitely come along and see us, and we'll have a stand there, so, yeah.
Now, talking about social media, Tessa's your Instagram gal. I'm more Facebook, and, as you'd expect, it's an age thing, probably. But in terms of the whole system, what do we do? What do we type in for koi clothing? What's the thing we need to put into our search engines?
So Facebook's just at koi clothing. Instagram is at koi underscore clothing.
Okay, there we go. Everybody needs to hit like and follow now.
Typing in the koi clothing thing.
As we speak.
And we've got... you see, I'm not sure whether there's Koi Clothing brand, which is based in West Yorkshire. That's not you, you see?
K-O-Y underscore clothing on Instagram.
K-O-Y. This is
K-O-Y. There we go.
See what we've done there? Yep. You know, a common sort of line. Graham Harper actually specifically said it's K-O-Y, not C-O-Y.
Not C-O-Y.
Unbelievable. We'll sort of... Tessa, any final thoughts?
Well, obviously, I think it's really lovely that the money you make, you send it over to Kenya as well. Have you actually been over yourself and seen the...
He was born.
Kenya. I was brought up in Kenya.
Oh, sorry, right.
Yeah.
That's why your brother's over there now.
Hence the reason we have koi clothing at the Chiulu Game Conservation Area.
I see.
Which is wonderful. Indeed, I see koi clothing has added 12 new photographs.
I missed that slight detail out, you see.
They look very stylish there. They look like two wonderful Avengers in that particular...
They do look very smart,
You've got James... you've got Alistair and your brother, who isn't James. What's your brother's name, Alistair?
My brother's name is Jimmy,
James and Alistair supporting the tribes of Kenya with Koi clothing. That is a stylish brand.
It's very unusual as well and different, I think. So, really
lovely. Well, that's the aim of the game, be different, stand out, as well as sort of tell a story at the same time.
Alistair, it's been awesome connecting with you yet again. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? Has it been okay for you?
Yes. Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much for the call. I've really enjoyed it. And, I look forward to keeping in touch with you in the future.
I was going to say, we look forward to connecting with you again in the very near future? I don't know, probably sometime March time. Keep us appraised of where you're going with Koi clothing on the road throughout the globe. Will you be back with us?
Yeah, definitely.
Yay!
Would love it.
To leave me. The Addams Family, Wonder Woman, The Green Hornet, Bonanza, Murder, She Wrote, The Mod Squad, Honey West, Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
We always are, aren't we, Tessa? Just hearing the fact that Arthur's on the running order in the script, the only kind of equal level of awesomeness is when we see Annette Andre on the script as well. The standard is going to be just so much better. Wonderful.
Not only that, I have to interrupt you and tell you that I rely on this at least once a month because it says, and now live, and it just gives reaffirmation.
Yeah, I know. It's just a case of checking that your heartbeat's working in the morning, and you think, there we are. You know, we're still alive, so our mission on the planet has not sort of ended.
There you are.
It is there. It is important. Right. Arthur, right. We were talking earlier with Bill Coles, and later we'll be talking about Larry Nemechek, about a new range of things that's just been released from the Gene Roddenberry Archive, in which we're privileged to see some of the original 1967 documentation, which was the writer's guide in terms of the tests that actually people were actually given to address the aspect of believability and working through that process. And we go through everything like the teaser, the acts, the style, the page count, the sort of question and answer session and so on. I'm presuming that was a regular thing that all writers such as yourself, whether it's the Wild Wild West, the Man from U.N.C.L.E., Honey West and so on, Mod Squad, any of the lines we actually heard about, would you be given an actor's guide to start off, or a writer's guide? Did you do the same when you were doing, of course, developing May Gray and other things?
I never saw anything like that.
No.
I never heard of it. I never saw it. And I must tell you, in my time, it would have been a laughing stock.
I see. Well, apparently this...
No, unlike newspapers, which have a style book, New York Times is a famous one. It's called From the Corner of the Saints and Sinners. And it's the style that every newspaper thing. Do we say President Trump, Mr. Trump, or moron? What do we do, if someone is dead or has an honorific? But to apply that to the writers that I knew in the 40-some-odd years that I was active, at least, in that, I never once saw anything like that.
Arthur, stay with us, because you can actually sort of work through this. It's page 22 of the Writer's Guide, and this is actually the format that Gene Roddenberry and Bob Justman and Gene Kuhn effectively put into the whole field, so DC Fontana. And clearly, we all know how well Harlan Ellison actually obeyed these instructions, so let's not go there with respect to Harlan. Because as we know, Harlan Ellison, as a writer, he's a law unto himself, even now. So that's worked with it. Anyway, the line is, if you're a TV professional, you already know the following seven rules. Rule number one, build your episode on an action-adventure framework. We must reach out, hold, and entertain a mass audience of some 20 million people, or we simply don't stay on the air. Is that a fair comment?
When was this written?
1967.
So there was the horrific concept of reaching out, even back then.
Mm, mm.
I mean, it's beyond belief.
Yeah.
No one contacts, no one talks to, people reach out, and Gene was reaching out back then. Shame on him. Even in heaven, shame on him.
Okay, number two. Tell your story about people, not about science and gadgetry. Joe Friday doesn't stop to explain the mechanics of his .38 before he uses it. Kildare never did a monologue about the theory of anaesthetics. Matt Dillon never identifies and discusses the breed of his horse before he rides off on it. Is that a fair comment?
Yes, I guess it is. I'm just, you'll have to forgive me. I'm stunned.
Well,
that
Arthur,
I knew him as a very intelligent man, and I revered the fact that he had been a commercial pilot before becoming a writer. So I mean, the man was a whole cloth. But any writer that I dealt with, much less myself, would have been terribly insulted if we were handed something like that.
Well, I must Admittedly, one of the actual responses that they actually had from a well-known writer, who actually remains anonymous in this situation, when responding to this whole thing was, "Are you people on LSD?" To which response was,
"Yes,
we tried,
well, of course,
but we couldn't keep it lit." I'll give you two more to sort of see with this. Keep in mind that science fiction is not a separate field of literature with rules of its own, but indeed needs the same ingredients as any story, including a jeopardy of some type, to someone we'd learn to care about, climactic build, sound motivation, you know the list.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's just picking topics to fill space. This is spurious. I mean, it's ludicrous. And, a story is a story. It doesn't matter. You know, let me just give you one instance of what Gene should have had said to him. I was producing Mud Squad, and a new writer came in with a story that he had stolen from somewhere. It was so evident.
No, surely an homage, not stealing.
I said, yes, I said, but this is old hat. You've either lifted it or, you know, you've seen it, and now you're trying to sell it to me. This is not going to go. He said, no, there's a twist. What? He said, I'm going to make them Chinese. That's what this thing is like. In other words, if you can't do it that way, do it this way. Yeah.
Well,
it's ridiculous. From the time of Homer on, stories involved people. If they didn't involve people, there wasn't a story. I mean, you would have a run of, like, computer numbers now and then try to get some energy out of that.
Well, the final seventh step here in terms of if you're sort of wanting to or had been wanting to write for the Star Trek routine, number seven, stop worrying about not being a scientist. How many cowboys, police officers and doctors wrote Westerns, detective and hospital shows?
I find it unbelievable that Gene would put his name to something like
This was actually the third revision, April 17th, 1967. We'll talk more about it with Larry Nemechek, who actually, it's Gene's son, Rod Rodenberry, who's actually released this from the archives. And we appreciate that, Arthur. I think we would have had it's fair to say, Tessa, probably a difference of opinion, perhaps, between Arthur and Gene in terms of...
No, definitely.
That's
what makes the world go round. Precisely. We're all different.
And presumably the same thing occurs with the Academy Awards. Now, Arthur, I kind of already sense where you're coming from this. Is this something where every year on an annual basis you settle down with Annette and say, right, let's watch a wonderful ceremony in which the men will be very frightened because of all sorts of things that are going on, etc.? Are you looking forward to the Academy Awards? Is it a case of, oh, not again? Or what's the view in San Diego?
Yeah, that's generally our attitude is...
not again.
Right. Only because we're very tired of hearing them thank Aunt Sarah and the agent's dentist. So, I mean, it would be quite different if it was as it was back in the days before I was born and they were doing it and it was on radio and they held it in the Pantages Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. And they came up and they said, you've just won. And he says, thank you very much. And he goes off with the statue. Yeah. And the whole ceremony was an hour long.
It's not going to happen these days. No. You're not going to squeeze them all into an hour. I mean, you know, days.
The speeches
you've got the after-show parties, and then you've got the legal people, and then you've got the, shall we actually mourn the fate of Price Waterhouse, and have they got the right envelope, and is it a completely different area?
Right.
It's a nightmare, you know. Yeah. And then you've got even movies like Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which even doesn't even sound like a movie, but, you know, that would got through the Gene Roddenberry Writer's Guide. I don't know. Anyway, I think the most pertinent gem that has come through today, Arthur, has probably the line that stories are about people and plot and development, and that's really what it's all about. So maybe we will.
Well, it always has been. If you think about it, if you had a conversation with someone who didn't, and it didn't include those elements, it is not a conversation. You're being given propaganda or something like that. But interplay involves human beings, and. There's a new show that we're seeing over here called Counterpoint on Stars, which is one of the streaming services.
STARZ, as opposed to STARZ.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And it's called Counterpoint, and it has a very good actor in it, a guy named C.J. Simmons. the reason I'm saying that it is an interesting new show is that they are counting that the American population is now predominantly under the age of 30, so no one should remember The Prisoner, because that's what they stole it from.
It's interesting.
Annette and I are sitting there watching the pilot on, and I turn to her, I say, what do you think? She says, oh, well, I think The Prisoner, yeah, that's it.
And that's the message. Finally, Arthur, before you go, I'll be screening for my postgraduate students tomorrow the original 1957 Glenn Ford Western 310 to Yuma. Does that strike any chords with your good self, or do you say, no, I much prefer the Russell Crowe remake in 2007, 50 years later? Or
oh, no, the Russell Crowe one. No, the 310 to Yuma was really quite good with Glenn Ford, and I was never a Glenn Ford fan, but I thought he did it. No, I wasn't. I always thought he was sort of white bread, but
a psychological Western, as referred to, with echoes. Yeah. Echoes, if you talk about homages or possibly just lifting entire storylines from High Noon and other things as well. But you know, that's the company.
Yes.
We might share the sort of Western with you in the not too distant future. But now, Arthur, can you believe it? It's time for Tessa to put those last two questions to you, because we've got the siren news coming up at 5:45. So, Tessa, please, if you will, be so kind as to put those last two interrogatives to the gentleman whose book your mother has still actually got hold of.
I know. She just doesn't want to give it back. It's just too interesting.
Exactly. Has she got through the time when the planes crashed into
I have no idea. I'll have to ask her. I actually haven't been in touch with her for a while. It's been busy. But anyway, Arthur, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I absolutely have. I have, as always. Yes.
That's brilliant. And will you be joining us again on the show sometime soon?
I'm not leaving this chair or the phone.
Oh,
means
there we go.
February we can look forward to more Annette Andre, more Arthur Weingarten. Yes. People will actually realise that, yes, there was life before The Prisoner, and indeed after The Prisoner, and continues to be so. And we might indeed actually have a few more teasers that will have been released from the Roddenberry archive, to which Arthur can say, Gene, what are you thinking?
I was really intrigued, because quite seriously, it wasn't, you know, just blather there. I'd never heard of that. Nor had I ever seen anything like that.
As you know, Arthur, we like to actually provide you with a whole new area to explore on these telephone links.
Look what I wasn't missing.
Exactly. Arthur Weingarten, we salute you. Take care now.